Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food, Organix. Look for their newest line, Pristine, the only complete line of pet food made with responsibly sourced ingredients. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/pets.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network, broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Greetings and welcome to Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher. I'm also known as the Food Healer. And today I'm going to be talking to Tony Elisuzan of the Animal Legal Defense Fund all about canned hunting ranches. So this is a topic I'm really interested in, so I'm just going to dive in. So Tony, are you there?
I am.
Hey,
Celia.
How are you?
I'm great and excited to talk to you about this important subject. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much for coming on. This is something that, honestly, I know so little about that I think it's something that's really, really important to get out there. When I was doing basic research for the interview, I was really shocked at what I found out. So if it's okay with you, I just want to, like, dive in and educate everybody that's listening. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. So basic number one question. Can you tell us what canned hunting ranches are?
Yeah, these are privately owned ranches that have herds of animals that are space-restricted and fenced in, making it essentially guaranteed that customers will be able to find and kill animals with ease. One customer of these ranches actually referred to it in an article as hunting in a shoebox.
Oh, God.
Yeah, another way to put it would be like shooting fish in a barrel.
It's like, I don't understand this concept at all because, I mean, I don't know. I always thought that hunting, like, part of it was, you know, the hunt and actually, like, stalking these animals and finding them. Like, I don't understand how this is a successful business.
You know, it's interesting that you say that because many sportsmen groups that are pro-hunting are actually against canned hunting ranches for that very reason, that they feel that it's, you know, unfair to the animals because they're literally trapped in a set space.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm not pro-hunting, period, really, unless it's, you know, a food source and the entire animal's being used and it's not endangered, that sort of thing. But, like, you know, I am not someone who would ever hunt for sport. But it just seems to me to be kind of like, it's kind of like, I feel like it's like going to a mall, kind of, and like, I want that one, you know, kind of thing. I don't know.
It really is. And, in fact, many of these facilities, they charge their customers bounties. Mm. So they have a list of the animals that they have at their ranch. And depending on which animal you kill, you pay a bounty for the amount for that animal. It really is like a mall. It's terrible.
And so, like, what kind of animals are these ranches offering to hunt?
Yeah, there's a really large variety, including native, non-native, and endangered species.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, many are from a family of species called ungulates, which are typically larger hoofed mammals, gazelle, deer, bison, things like that. But there are many facilities that have exotic animals, and some even offer to import exotic animals solely for the purposes of being killed for trophies.
So, okay, let me see if I can get this straight. Let's say my life goal is to kill a lion. I could, like, contact these places and be like, hey, you got any lions? I want to come in next Tuesday kind of thing?
So there, when you're dealing with endangered animals, there are other regulations that kick in, but there are facilities that offer to do things like that, to import exotic species from other countries solely to come to the ranch so that somebody can shoot them.
Wow. And where is this happening?
So these ranches are scattered throughout the states in the U.S. There's a very large percentage of them in Florida and Texas. For example, in Texas, it's estimated there's 500 ranches alone.
Are you serious?
I'm serious, yes.
I mean, this is something, I did an episode on canned hunting ranches in Africa, you know, with like all the safari animals and that sort of thing. I had no idea before I reached out to you guys that this existed in this country.
Yeah, it exists, and it's prevalent in many of the states.
Wow. Wow. Okay, so let's say I want to go to Florida and be, you know, some hunter. Like, what are the exotics that one can kill in Florida?
Yeah, it's really a wide range, and whether you're in Florida or Texas, mm-hmm. you know, they have several different, you know, different ranches have different species, but there are many endangered species that are on some of these facilities.
Mm. And so mostly like trophy hunting, so like horned animals, that kind of thing, or pelts, or...
Exactly. There's several different kinds of, for example, African antelope are very common on these facilities, and there's various regulations relating to certain specific African antelopes, but that is the type of, you know, trophy animal that is featured on at many of these can hunting facilities.
So are any of these animals being raised here in order to do this?
Yes, they're almost all raised natively within the U.S.
Okay.
Exotic species, they've been, you know, brought over and they get bred within the U.S. typically.
And so I'm assuming that they're like, that they're used to people, and so, you know what I mean? Like, are these animals that are kind of given free rein and can be wild, or are they kind of going into barns at night and being fed by people, that sort of thing?
It really varies ranch by ranch.
Yeah.
You know, the size differs a lot, the different practices at the ranch differ a lot. But there certainly are facilities where they do put out food for the animals in certain spots
yeah.
so that they can draw them there when their customers arrive.
This is just, it's so twisted to me. I mean, it really just sounds, it's like, I don't know how you do this. I really, really respect the fact that you can do this, because I think this would just drive me bananas trying to deal with it. Just the logic side of this whole thing, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they really are a problem. I mean, these are commercial facilities that profit from death. They assign, like I said, what are essentially bounties to the animals that they, you know, these facilities get paid whenever
yeah.
a customer makes a successful kill. And part of the problem is there's a lack of any meaningful regulation or enforcement of the regulation, and therefore there's no guarantee that the animals are being properly cared for at the facility or treated humanely. For example, you know, many of these customers are not expert marksmen, and there's real risk that an animal could just be wounded and could suffer for days or weeks before they succumb to their injuries. There's nothing that prevents that from happening. And that's why it's critical that the USDA steps up and actively enforces the Animal Welfare Act regarding these facilities, as the Animal Legal Defense Fund recently urged them to do.
And so that defense act that you're talking about, is that something that exists in, like, slaughterhouses currently?
Yeah, the Animal Welfare Act is a statute that applies to many different facilities that deal with animals in the U.S.
Okay. Wow, so then, like, factory-farmed animals are being treated better than these guys are.
Well, it varies depending on the industry,
yeah.
but certainly, you know, the Animal Welfare Act, for example, applies to zoos, facilities like that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is just such a trip. So, like, I mean, I know it's a broad spectrum because we're talking about a whole bunch of different kinds of animals and things, but, like, what? How much does it vary? Like, how much are you paying to kill one of these things?
Yeah, it varies, you know, for native species, like deer, for example, it's, you know, sometimes just a few $100s.
Mm-hmm.
Where the exotic animals, it's sometimes several $1,000s. So, it varies ranch to ranch and by the type of species.
It's this, wow. And so... I'm assuming that everyone that is hunting on these doesn't need a license either?
Yeah, so that's part of the problem. At the federal level, the Animal Legal Defense Fund has sent a letter to the USDA that I just mentioned,
yeah.
which points out that these facilities are subject to the Animal Welfare Act, and yet they're not complying with that law. For endangered animals, there's the Endangered Species Act that is regulated by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. It also applies, and we have sent comment letters to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service explaining that these facilities should not qualify for permits under the Endangered Species Act
yeah.
because by definition, killing of endangered species is not in their best interest and does not enhance the survival or propagation of the species as a whole, which is a test that must be met under the Endangered Species Act to receive a permit.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the state level, the states that allow can hunting, which is a majority, unfortunately,
wow.
have varying regulations, but typically amounts to a small annual fee and a one- or two-page application with
Great.
No meaningful inspection or enforcement regarding the care of animals. Like, for example, in Florida, for $70 and a one-page application form, you could start a can hunting ranch tomorrow.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And so, like, are these hard? Like, do you have to be in the know to find these? Or, like, is it, you know, billboards along I-95, like, come and kill something while you're on vacation?
Exactly. I mean, many of these ranches, they, you know, pay this small fee to their state. They put up a website and they start, you know, charging bounties the next day. It's unfortunately very easy to do.
And so because of the Animal Welfare Act and all this, too, there's really no regulations at all for these places, is there?
Well, there's no regulations that are being enforced the way they should be enforced. So, for example, the Animal Welfare Act, it should be enforced as these facilities, and currently it's not.
Yeah.
That's something that we're asking the USDA to step up and do the right thing.
I mean, are there people that are even available in these states that do this for a living, where they, you know, go and find these places? Or is this something like there is no one, so the USDA has to do it?
I mean, there's certainly, you know, there's regulators available to enforce the law.
Yeah.
They just haven't done it to date. But certainly, you know, they have the manpower and the ability to do it.
God, it just sounds like if they can open so easily that, you know, I could see it becoming something that's like a fly-by-night. Like if one place is in trouble, it closes down and, you know, gets all the animals out and to a new plot of land in like 2 days kind of thing. I just can't believe how many there are. That's the part that's blowing my mind.
Yeah, I mean, it really is amazing. Like I said, Texas alone has over 500 of these ranches.
Crazy. And, I mean, are there any benefits to canned hunting ranches at all?
There's absolutely no benefit to the animals. There's also no purpose other than allow people to feed their bloodlust by killing sentient beings in order to obtain an animal trophy for their wall.
And, like, what do these places, do they have any, what's their, like, rhetoric and justification? Do they have any, or it's just like, come and have a good time, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a profit business.
Yeah.
There's absolutely nothing that's benefiting the species.
Yeah.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, you know, who I mentioned issues the permits under the Endangered Species Act, essentially does it under an unlawful pay-to-play scheme.
Wow.
Which is inconsistent with the law. And under the scheme, what they do, the facilities say, well, I'm benefiting the species because I'll donate 10% of this bounty to a so-called conservation group.
Mm-hmm.
And that's somehow helping the species. But first of all, that's wrong.
Yeah.
Secondly, the conservation group, quote-unquote, that they donate this money to is really a pro-hunting lobby group.
Oh, perfect.
That does not even spend the money on helping the species. It's really promoting hunting interest and making sure that there's more opportunities for hunters to kill animals.
This is just staggering, and especially because, you know, I'm making a big assumption here, but I mean, there's a lot of guns in this country, and there's a lot of guns in Texas, and there's a lot of guns in Florida, and there's more and more constantly. So I would assume this is an industry that's growing, unfortunately.
It is. I mean, we don't have specific numbers of how many ranches are out there or the growth rate,
yeah.
But, it, you know, there's an estimate of over 1,000 canned hunting ranches U.S.-wide, 500 in Texas, but 1,000, you know, in the entire country.
And so, like, do you have any idea, like, you know, how many people come in per day to hunt, or how many animals are actually being killed in a year kind of thing?
We don't have that kind of data,
yeah.
Because other than endangered species, that's not information that typically would have to be reported by these facilities.
Oh, man.
But you can just extrapolate based on the numbers and the fact that they stay in business.
Yeah.
That, you know, you're dealing with thousands, if not tens of thousands of animals being killed every year.
And, I mean, do these people, like, is anything done with the meat on these poor animals, or is they just, you know, is this just a colossal waste? I mean, it's just so horrible to even think about.
Right. I mean, it's horrible on any level.
Yeah.
Certainly, I suspect some of the hunters may, you know, use the meat on their animals, but most of them are just trophy hunters,
yeah.
Especially with regard to the endangered animals. They're just there so they can hang a head on their wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the horns. I mean, my father was a hunter for years, and he used to, I'm not going to say he hunted the right way, because he came home with a skull when I was about 6 and I had a heart attack basically. And that's ended that for about a good 30 years, which was awesome. You know, but back then it was the type of thing, like if they wounded something, they had to track it and they had to kill it. Like they played by the rules. And I don't know how long canned hunting has been around. It was never his style. He was never hunting anything endangered, but it's also just, it's such an interesting thing to me. I mean, if someone is living in the woods and they're killing something to eat and feed their family and use the entire animal, I feel like there's, you know, then there's a sort of more of a purpose towards it. But just to be able to be like, so, you know, I went down to Florida last weekend and was bored and like bagged 5 gazelle and they're, you know, they're coming up next week and they're going to be so pretty in my living room. I just don't understand this mentality.
Yeah, it's interesting. And these are not facilities that are catering to people who are, you know, killing the animals because they need to eat.
Yeah, exactly.
The, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service publishes a survey of fishing and hunting data, and the most recent study there showed that there are only 13.7 million hunters over the age of 16 in the U.S., and that's all hunters. That's not dealing with this, you know, canned hunting subculture. And of those, 11.6 million are big game hunters, which are the type of animals that you typically find at these ranches.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, that's less than 5% of the population. And it gets more interesting when you dig into the demographic data. About 90% of hunters are men. 72% are between 35 and 64 years of age. And they're nearly all white, middle to upper class men. In fact, less than 5% of hunters are non-white.
Really?
You're dealing with a very specific, small subset of the population. And for canned hunting, that was, remember, that's all hunting.
Yeah.
But for canned hunting, they're catering to, you know, middle-aged, rich white men.
Yeah, yeah.
By definition, because they're charging bounties in the thousands of dollars. And, you know, most Americans can't afford that. They've got more important things to spend their money on.
Yeah, totally.
So you're dealing with a very, very small segment of, you know, frankly, rich, middle-aged white men.
That are basically bored and are looking for some way to get kicks.
Exactly. To feed a bloodlust.
You know, this is so disheartening. It really, really is. But I'm really, really excited that we're talking about this because, you know, I mean, I do this every week and I didn't know about this. So I know this is something that a lot of people don't know about. And like I said, I think it's really, really important to be getting out this information. So, you know, thank you for talking to me about this. We need to take a break for station identification. I am talking to Tony Ellie Susan of the Animal Legal Defense League, all about canned hunting ranches in the U.S. We'll be back in about a minute, minute and a half. So stay tuned.
Well, she's her own. She's her own female. She's her own female. That's why I like her. I like her a lot. And she don't know that she's her own female. She's her own female, and she don't know.
This episode is brought to you by Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food, Organix. You put a lot of care and thought into what you eat. After all, you're a food radio listener. That thoughtfulness goes hand in paw with how you feed your pets. Purposeful pet food doesn't happen by accident. Castor and Pollux scours the earth to carefully select the best organic and responsibly sourced ingredients. New Pristine from Castor and Pollux is the only complete line of pet food made with ingredients that are responsibly raised, caught, or grown. Feed your dog or cat the new standard, like grass-fed beef, wild-caught fish, and vegetables grown without synthetic fertilizers or chemical pesticides. Pristine from Castor and Pollux. Purposeful pet food. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/pets.
And we are back. I'm talking about canned hunting ranches with Tony Ellie Susan of the Animal Legal Defense Fund. So, Tony, I mean, one of the things that people say that have these kind of places, this was a big argument in Africa, was, you know, well, if we didn't do this, you know, this is all about educating the public and educating the public about these animals. Are you hearing that line here?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the justifications the canned hunting industry tries to use. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
I mean, for the native species, these are species that are going to thrive in the U.S., whether they're on canned hunting ranch facilities or not. And for the endangered species, the ones who have, you know, developed a population within the U.S., if you shut down the canned hunting ranches, they, you know, they're because they're endangered, they're protected. So it's not like they could be killed off.
Right.
They have to be allowed to continue to survive and thrive in the U.S.
And that'll only work if, like, the environment is correct for them. So you could have a whole pack or a whole group of animals that are really, really sick because this isn't their ideal environment.
Well, it's interesting because it appears that Texas is a good, suitable environment for many of these species. I mean, they really are thriving.
Well, that's good.
In these areas.
Unreal. And then, okay, let's say one of these ranches doesn't have a permit. It's operating. Like, how bad are the fines for them?
Yeah, there's almost no turn effect for people operating without permits. You know, depending on the state, it would be a very small nominal fine.
Wow.
It's unlikely it's even a crime in most states.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So that makes this even more complicated. This is, I'm just blown away. And I know I've said it a million times, but I'm really blown away at how underground this is, I guess, unless you're a hunter that's into this kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're dealing with a very, very small subculture of people who visit these canned hunting ranches. Like I said, there's many hunters who've gone there and say they'll never go back. You know, the person I mentioned earlier who was quoted as referring to it as hunting in a shoebox was a hunter who, you know, went to one of these facilities and said, I'm never going to go back because I just don't think it's fair to the animals.
Well, that's good to hear. I mean, I've heard, you know, from hunters, like, you know, I just love animals. And it's like, and that's why you kill them. Okay. You know, so it's a really... I don't understand the mentality of it. I don't understand the fact that there's no thrill of the chase, or, you know, there's no, you don't need any kind of education, any kind of training, any kind of background, anything. It's just like, it sounds like you just, you know, get out of your air conditioned Jeep and they point to, you know, I don't know, Fred the gazelle and bang, you know, it's like, it just sounds heartbreaking.
It is. I mean, and there's no logic that can justify, you know, the people who say they love these animals, they don't mean it, or they're just, you know, illogical. Because if you go out there and see these beautiful animals in the wild and look them in the eyes, there's no way you can say, I love this animal, and the next moment pull a trigger and end its life.
Yeah.
It's just not possible.
Yeah. I mean, all for the sake of, you know, an ottoman for a leg or a horn or, you know, it's like, it's really, really twisted. And it's amazing to me how many people, I feel like it's almost like a disconnect that certain people have, you know, because it's really, there are people that can do this and there are people that can't. And I mean, you know, there's, all of us are very different and all of us like different things. But I feel like there's just, it's that thing. I mean, you know, I grew up with animals, I've had pets, and I feel like anyone that's ever had a pet couldn't do this, but maybe I'm wrong. You know, I have no idea. I guess if the egos impacted you bigger than your pet did, then, you know.
Yeah, I can't understand it either. It's hard to understand sort of an illogical, irrational behavior pattern.
Just, and like, how long have these things been around? Do you know?
You know, they really became popular, you know, maybe 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But they've certainly been operating since the 90s. There's been issues relating to them in the press since the 90s. So like the last 20 or 30 years is when they've really, you know, grown as an industry.
It's so wild. It's like armchair hunter. You know, it's like, don't leave, you know, you don't have to leave the comfort of your home. I mean, that was one thing that I remember hearing about when my dad did hunt when I was really young, you know, and they would go, you know, they were gone for like weeks at a time and they would be, you know, following some poor unsuspecting thing around and they'd track it for a while, you know, and if God forbid they wounded it, I mean, they hunted that thing down till they got it. And I don't like that either, but I do respect that a lot more. And just they understand it. I feel like there's almost a little bit more of an understanding of the fact that you're taking that life and that that being needs to be respected, that you're not going to just let it suffer. And, you know, like there's a lot to be said for a clean kill. But in this case, it's like, you know, I don't know. It's wouldn't a shooting gallery be just as good? But I guess not.
Yeah, like I said, I'm obviously opposed to all hunting. But even among hunters, many of them, you know, do not look upon canned hunting as an appropriate action for all the reasons you articulated. So you really are dealing with this very, very small subculture, even among hunters who would visit these canned hunting ranches. And, you know, it got so bad. In fact, there was, you know, one Texas ranch several years ago offered to let people kill animals over the internet. So you could go to a website.
Oh, come
and,
on.
And, yeah, no, that's, yeah, that really happened. So it does go to show that, you know, this small subculture of people are people who really, you know, just have a bloodlust.
Wow. Wow. And I mean, what an amazing disconnect, too. I mean, you're basically just playing a video game at that point. So, like, hey, you know, like, that's just, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So how long have you been dealing with this? How long have you been working on this stuff?
Yeah, so I just recently joined the Animal Legal Defense Fund about 6 months ago from private practice.
Cool.
And we've been engaged in this campaign for the last several months since I've joined. But there's been other groups involved, you know, over the last several years that
mm-hmm.
we're, you know, joining in a coalition with.
So I definitely know that I have listeners that are going to be really interested in this and they're going to want to learn a lot more about this and just this whole issue. I mean, do you know any websites that we can send them to, including yours, so they can find out more about this?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Animal Legal Defense Fund has a webpage at ALDF.org/stop the hunt, and that's all one word, where we have more information about our efforts to stop canned hunting. That website includes a tracker of all federal permit applications by canned hunting facilities.
Wow.
And individuals can go on our webpage and submit their comments directly to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services.
Nice. Nice. And then do you know of any, like, hunting organizations that are against this enough that they're trying to help?
Well, the problem is hunting organizations generally don't like animal welfare groups at all.
Good point.
So none of them are trying to shut down actively canned hunting facilities that I'm aware of.
Okay.
But that's not to say they support canned hunting facilities.
You right.
know, like I said, there are, you know, many hunters, many sportsmen groups who don't like canned hunting. But at the same time, they're not going to take active efforts to try to shut it down because they'd be concerned that it would, you know, more broadly impact on their ability to hunt.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ugh. Well, Tony, is there anything else that you want to tell our listeners that we haven't covered? This is such an intense topic. I'm just worried that I may have forgotten something.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate the time. I think we've covered all the points I have, but I thank you very much for inviting me on your show and letting your listeners know about this very important topic.
Yeah, and I mean, thank you for taking the time because, like I said, I mean, you know, I do this all the time, and I really had no idea. And once I discovered that you guys are working on canned ranches in the U.S., it was like, oh, man, you've got to be kidding. You know, I just naively was like, oh, yeah, they're all in Africa, you know, all safari. And it's like, yeah, not even. So thank you so much for taking the time to help educate me and the listeners about this. And if there's anything I can ever do, please reach out. I'll be more than happy. I'd love to keep up on this. You know, if you guys make some big dents or if you need some help getting it out on the airways, just reach out and I'll be glad to do whatever I can.
Well, absolutely. I really appreciate that.
Likewise. And thank you. And for everybody else, thank you guys for listening. We'll have a new show next week. As always, you can find me either on the heritageradionetwork.org /animal instinct. If you'd like to subscribe so you don't have to listen live, you can find me on iTunes and you can also find me on Stitcher. Also on Twitter, I am at Food Healer. On Facebook, I am at Animal Instinct. Put in a 73 when you're doing the search and it'll pop up. Look for a cat wearing glasses. Thanks, guys, for listening. I'll talk to you next week. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Heritage_Radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.